This is CliffCentral.com.
All righty, it's Monday morning, and I know it's over in the U.S., it's midnight, so we're keeping this poor dude up. And I know he has plenty to do at the moment, because we often listen to his show. I was listening to him and the guys the other day, just like railing against Trump, and it was really, really funny. It was one of my favorite things to hear the whole of last week. Mark Bland is on the line. He's on Skype from the United States. Hey, Mark, how are you, man?
Man, I'm doing fantastic, Gareth.
I feel like I haven't spoken to you in ages.
It's been a little while since we've talked, but, you know, I feel like that gives us time to have stories and things to talk about and to get in depth on unique things.
Well, you've never had nothing to say. And I mean, I was just mentioning that I heard that you and the rest of the guys were talking the other day about your favorite president. And obviously, I follow you on Twitter as well. How are things going over there? Because I hear lots of mixed reports about, you know, this horrible situation, obviously, with the guns, and I want to know what you think of that. But also, this president, he just doesn't seem to care that you don't like him.
Okay, listen. I have a president that likes to have sex with porn stars and wants a space army. Now, and I still don't like him. Despite that, I still don't like him. I mean, this is literally what I would have dreamed of as a kid playing with action figures. Like, right. You know, the president, you know, all that cool. Like, this, I should love this, but I don't. Because, and last time I talked to you,
yeah,
you said, well, there's a lot of people that agree with him and like the things that he does.
Yes.
And around the world. That think he, what is your personal opinion of him, Garrett?
No, I think he's a nutcase. The only things that I like about him, because there are a lot of things I don't. I think he's unhinged. He's possibly, potentially a very dangerous outcome for the world. I mean, he's meeting with people like Kim Jong Un, and that can only go badly. But I think that what I like about Trump is that he does certainly stand up for the right for people to have free speech, even if it's about him and he doesn't like it. Because he's often on Twitter and especially on Twitter, that's his biggest mouthpiece. But he seems to speak up for, I don't know, a lot of unpopular points of view, and he doesn't seem to give a shit. And I've always liked that about people. And I don't care about him sleeping with porn stars, but it does worry me that he's got this unstable White House. He's firing people all the time. He's rehiring people. He's hiring people that nobody in the world should hire. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot that bothers me about the guy.
I'm in the same boat as you. There's nothing. Here's the problem. Like, Trump is pretending to be president. That's what he does. He pretends.
Yeah.
His show, does Warren Buffett act like him? Does Bill Gates act like him? Do any of the rich people around the world act like him?
No.
Because real rich people don't act like that.
Right.
And he's just made up rich. You've always heard the name, and it came up in the 1980s because of the Trump Tower and the name Trump being on it and all this, and it became synonymous with wealth, and then the TV show added to that, the reality show, The Apprentice.
Right.
Just added to that with 8-foot-tall gold Trump letters as he stands in front of them and stupid crap like that.
Yeah.
And these people were sold on it. And the problem is that the people that were sold on it, they're not doing anything that helps the world, like in the United States. Like, I'm not saying that Midwestern rural people are not worth anything to this earth. What I'm saying is that, like, the way that the country moves is more New York, LA as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not a very cowtown type view the rest of the world has of the United States.
Right.
You know, we're supposed to have a more modern view of us.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, he, you know, you just talked about the fact that he doesn't mind saying these things, and he doesn't mind if people come after him. Well, he's also been implementing censorship stuff behind the scenes and censoring things.
Trying to
put things out into the open at press conferences about how maybe, you know, the media needs to go away. Maybe, you know, well, I know that people should.
I know he
libel laws.
This is something. There's something you and I probably agree with him on too, and that is he's not a big fan of the mainstream media, and we both have our problems with the mainstream media and the fact that they are often shills for a whole lot of points of view.
Sure.
And they try to influence public opinion sometimes in a not so good way. What's your feeling on the way he's almost dismantled CNN? I mean, they've got major problems there now, and it's probably just because the president of the United States is up against them.
Here's the problem. I know for a fact Donald Trump was sitting in his office on September 11th, 2001, 9/11.
Yes.
And probably flipping through the channels, and I don't think at any point – during that flipping through the channels, he stopped on CNN, watched it, and said, oh, no, these aren't the same towers getting hit in the same video as every other news station. These are different and fake. This is CNN. It's fake news. No. That stuff was made up during the campaign trail.
Right.
Specifically just to discredit somebody that was coming after him. And is it just CNN? See, that's the funny thing. CNN gets all the blowback, but it's like, every single major news outlet in the United States is pretty much against him, except Fox News.
Yeah,
it's that broad. So now all of a sudden, CNN takes the brunt of the hit because he keeps saying their name the most. Yet the other 99%, or 9,000 news outlets that are against him, he doesn't have a problem with them. Like he's not saying MSNBC every time he turns around. No, he just says CNN.
Mm-hmm.
He's turned it into a thing. Another marketing ploy. It's just a catchphrase or a clue word to get people to go, oh yeah, that's bad. That's it.
Tell me
it
what you
associates things.
What do you make of these school shootings? I mean, what's the story according to you and your sources over there in terms of how we deal with this? Because we hear lots of people are upset about it. There's obviously no one in the world who wants this kind of thing to happen, but it keeps happening, and it doesn't seem like there's any answer, and it seems to be getting worse.
It's a people problem, man. I know we talk about guns, and of course I'm down for gun control if they want to do it or if they don't want to do it. Either way, I don't mind. I freely shoot guns. I own guns. So there's not a problem with guns for me. But if they want to do some things on that side to try to, like, filter this out, beautiful. Go ahead and do it. I'm not going to be afraid to deal with that. On the other side of this, we have a people problem, man. People over here have slowly become desensitized to others. And this general understanding of couth and handling yourself has slowly been declining. And when people in their 30s and 40s. So, like, when those people who are supposed to be the ones kind of doing the maintaining and running of the country on a day-to-day basis, because we're, like, right in the middle of all that,
mm-hmm.
age-wise, the younger kids don't have anything that they can look up to properly because the people in their 30s and 40s are starting to get messed up in their heads. And these kids now, when that's the teachers, that's the people around them on a daily basis that all lead to these kids or these people deciding, that's it, I'm just going to go in and shoot everybody. And what's really weird to me, Gareth, is that we've had clues from the last few shooters. Like, there was things put out on Facebook or social media, or somebody tipped them off on a YouTube video comment or this, that, or the other, and no one did anything about it. No one said anything or even took it seriously. And then all of a sudden the school shooting happened in whatever town it was, and boom.
You mentioned something interesting there that I think is worth reflecting on, is that people have lost the ability to empathize and to be sympathetic to other people's causes, and it's always us versus them. It's always a me versus you. I have to win. This bothers
and
me.
And Donald Trump has led to some of that.
Yeah, of course, and it's partisan stuff, right? It's Republicans cannot possibly agree with Democrats, and Democrats can't agree with Republicans because you have to stick to your side, and you have to let your side seem to win.
Right. It's all come down to I used to talk about gas prices in a nostalgic way. And let me just share this story with you, Gareth. At one time in history, I remember going to the gas station here in the United States. And if a gas station was at 95 cents,
mm-hmm.
the one across the street would be at 90 cents,
right.
5 cents cheaper,
right.
you know, and then that would make them drop theirs down to 85 cents and back and forth, and it was a price war.
Right.
And then somewhere into the early 2000s, and I would say it was shortly after 9/11, within that first couple of years there after 9/11,
mm-hmm.
We became, if this gas station over here has gas for 95 cents and this gas station over here has it for 90 cents, the 90 cent station now goes, oh, I'm not going to allow you to make 5 more cents than me. So they go up and go up to the higher price.
Right.
And then if they go up to the higher price, they go up to the higher price because now it's about, you're not going to beat me. You're not going to make a nickel more than me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the mentality of people. It has become very, this is not good. I have to win.
Yeah.
I have to win. Not that remember, it used to be, I want to help. So I'll make it cheaper. Now it's, I want to win, so it becomes more expensive. I need it. Whatever the price is, I'm going to have to make sure my side wins. And that's become a general vibe in the country that I've seen. This is my personal experience.
Well, we can check in with you on the queue every week here on cliffcentral.com. I'm sure you've got lots of good stuff lined up for this week, and thanks for talking to us this morning, Mark.
Let me ask you a real quick question, Gareth, before I get off here.
Okay.
Leading into something that we're going to probably be talking about on the queue.
Okay.
As a white man in 2018 in South Africa.
Yeah.
Do you feel oppressed?
I don't know. I mean, I think that that's an individual question. For me, no, I've never felt oppressed by anyone because I don't regard anyone as my master. So, no. And if I've been treated that way, I've probably been blissfully ignorant of it because it's just never entered my understanding of my place in the world. I do think that there is a lot of that going on, and I think it happens with women. I think it happens with minorities. I think it happens with black people in this country. I think it happens with some white people. I do think that there are problems in group identity, and I think that if you consider your group identity the most important thing about you, you're going to at some point have to take on other people's oppression. I don't believe in that. I'm like, you have to go after me as an individual, which I've had happen, and even then I didn't feel oppressed. It wasn't like society was against me. It was a couple of bad actors.
Fair enough.
What do you think?
Well, that's all. I was just, what's that again?
What do you think?
Well, the reason I brought this up is because there was a Harvard study that recently came out that said that a majority of white people in the United States feel oppressed. And I said that was completely untrue, and I don't. But then again, I also know that this is a Harvard study, so it's up on the East Coast, and so it's going to be a lot of big cities that they're going to be hitting. So the population and how many each other on a daily basis changes the dynamic of what the answers that they get. Because here in the Midwest, everybody's pretty rural.
Yeah, but so you don't think that maybe the white people have learned this from the minorities in America? And this is why they voted for Trump. Suddenly they felt, oh, well, if everyone else can play identity politics, maybe we should too. Maybe we're being oppressed. It's the victim Olympics. This is what happens when the West wins and the West loses the narrative to the left. And I'm afraid that's what's going on with white people now, as they're starting to see themselves as victims. It's ridiculous.
I will say this to end this because I know you need to get out.
Yeah.
But the United States, at one point, in the early 1900s, Great Britain was the most powerful nation in the entire world.
Right.
They were the number one dog. And then their empire slowly fell. And the United States came to power. And I feel like we might be on the front end of the beginning of the end of the United States being the big dog.
Yeah.
The number one country.
All right,
I think it might be coming to an end.
You wouldn't be the first to say it. Gore Vidal has written several books about this and did before he died. And there's plenty to read about the American empire coming to a crashing halt. But let's see how that unfolds. And I hope for your sake it doesn't come to blows. Thanks, Mark. Good to talk to you. The queue is on cliffcentral.com every Thursday, and you can catch the podcasts of every other episode that you might have missed up to now. Let's get into some other stuff, because Mubs has been sitting here, and she's been irritated with me because I'm not going to her with news.
Have not been irritated.
I don't know.
I manage my time wisely here.
I know, but you're busy.
I'm not giving you the news, I'm multitasking on other things.
I can see you.
Don't you worry.
You're researching and carrying on. What have we got?
If you had all the money in the world and you never had to worry about how many zeros you're spending on anything,
yeah,
How much would you pay for a one-page job application that was once filled out by Steve Jobs?
Zero rand.
Okay, Ben, you can sit this one out. Thank you. Gareth?
Look, I know that this is going to go for a ridiculous price.
Yes, but that's why I'm saying you have all the money in the world and you can buy anything. You could buy, like, a lunch tin of soil that supposedly came from, I don't know, Old Trafford or whatever.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, you can buy any useless thing.
And people buy stupid stuff because it's important to them. So, I mean, it depends from individual to individual. But what is the going rate for a Steve Jobs one-pager job application?
Well, an internet entrepreneur from England was the winning bidder, a Boston-based auction house PR Auction, according to them. The buyer wishes to remain anonymous.
Of course he does, because he's an idiot.
He paid 2 million rand.
Well, wow.
2 million rand for a one-page job application that was once filled out by Steve Jobs.
Well, for him it's important.
Sure. So is a lunch tin of soil for somebody else.
I don't think that this is about how many zeros you have behind your bank balance and your name. People want what they want. I don't understand, for example, why someone, you mentioned Old Trafford, why someone would pay tens of thousands of rands to fly to Manchester and to watch a game of football.
Of course you understand it. You just don't want to do the same thing.
No, that's my point, is everybody has their thing, right? To me, it's crazy to spend that on going to watch a sports event. But for Ben, that would be absolutely the right thing to do. Now, you don't have to be rich and powerful to want to indulge in whatever you collect. Maybe you collect stamps. Some people collect stamps. They will pay a fortune for the stamp that they need to make their collection complete or to make it the best collection.
But you do have to be a certain level of rich if the bid is going to go up to 2 million.
Yeah, sure. True.
I mean, look, you know, if you're the British Museum, you can go to Egypt and you can buy some pretty impressive collectibles from ancient history. But if you are just a run-of-the-mill person on the street, you don't have that kind of resource.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think this is cool. I like that there are people who want to collect this stuff because someone's going to look after it.
So the application dates back to 1973, complete with spelling and punctuation errors.
Yes.
There you go, grammar Nazis. Mm. It had been expected to fetch only around $50,000, but it sold for more than three times that amount. The form lists his name as Stephen Jobs, his address as Reed College, the Portland, Oregon college that he attended briefly. Under a section titled Special Abilities, Jobs wrote, Tech or Design Engineer. The document does not state what position or company the application was intended for. And then Jobs and his friend Steve Wozniak founded Apple, of course, about 3 years after he had filled out this application form. So now it's probably going to sit in a glass case somewhere at a value of 2 million rand.
Here's the real question, though. If you do buy something like that, I don't know if you've got something really precious at your house or your office or anywhere else. I mean, I often walk into an office and I'll see some, like, Rugby 95 jersey on the wall behind glass, you know? And people obviously love this stuff. Now, what do you do when you've bought this? It's going to go up on your wall, or it's going to go in a special presentation area. It's going to be on display, basically.
Well, you want to show it off now.
Well, you paid 2 million for it. You're not going to put it in the safe.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. What would you do? What would you collect if you could buy anything, if there was some historical artifact, like the people who bought the Michael Jackson glove, or, you know, people who bought the Beatles, let's say John Lennon's first handwritten musical score of one of the great Beatles songs. Some people like that stuff. What would you get? What would you collect, Ben?
Sure.
Yeah, the pressure.
Gary Players?
Yes.
Ball hairs?
Oh. Gareth, that's revolting. Why would you want another man's ball hairs?
I don't know.
I don't know what you... What do you want? I mean, what would you collect?
Yeah.
What do you collect, maybe?
I don't know. Like, I like the idea of collecting stuff, but ultimately, as you get older, you just realize you're nothing but a hoarder. So, like, I can understand the Steve Jobs job application because you frame it on a wall. It's a conversation piece, much like art.
Mm-hmm.
So, it to me, that's art. Even though it's a job application.
Yeah, of course.
It's just odd.
Sure.
Collecting, I just want to collect memories. I know that sounds so dreadfully cliched, but I can't bring myself to the thing of, like, why would you want to buy something that's just an object of... You would get so bored. Like, I've been to golf days. I've even hosted auctions where you're trying to flog some piece of crap that's been signed by some sports star you'll forget about in 3 years.
Yeah.
And you try to get enthusiastic, but deep down it's like, what a waste of money.
Mm. Right.
But that's just how I see it, because I don't want somebody living in, I want to leave the house with money. House is like, it's, everything's fine and stuff. I don't need to have things lying on the wall.
Okay.
Great pictures and videos of being somewhere. That's a real win.
You collect anything, Sia?
Oh. Well, I remember when Harpo Studios closed down a few years ago.
Oh.
Don't we all, Sia? Don't we all?
What a sad day.
And Sia. McDonald's, that idiot, bought the plots and just crushed the studios. Anyway, Oprah auctioned off seats, the actual seats in her
Would you have
studio.
One?
I don't want the audience seats.
You want her chair.
Her chair.
Yeah.
You know, like circa 2001, 2002, and she had this light brown set, and she had these cream leather sofa situation.
You would buy those, and you put them in your house and use them?
But not even the whole sofa. I'd want just her chair.
Would you use it?
Yes.
You'd put it in your house?
I would like, but it would be for me. Like, yeah. I'd put it in my study to sit and read, for example. Ain't nobody got time for just Mabale coming over to my place and putting her crusty feet on it.
Oh, you see, that's exactly what I was going to
ask.
Is allowed to sit on this chair?
Just mine. That was it.
So if you went home for a December holiday and then you had somebody house sitting, you come back and they'd spilled red wine on the sofa, what's going to happen to that person?
That person would not even exist at Home Affairs. I would wipe out their ID number. They would die.
What would you collect, Mubs?
I think similar to what Ben was saying about collecting memories, I'd like to collect all the work that never made it to fruition by creatives.
That's funny.
What does that mean?
Like, if you're a writer of, you know, stories, I'd like to collect all the stuff that you first started out with before the final story actually made it onto either the movie or made it into the book.
So the first draft of the Harry Potter.
Would you want J.K. Rowling's handwritten coffee notes?
No, I just like to get. I like the idea of getting in people's thoughts to see how they think and then how their thought process changes. Hmm. And then if you were like a Michael Jackson, the song that never made it to release, why that didn't happen. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
The notes, the stuff that you scribbled before the final finished product.
Nice.
Hmm.
See, everybody's got their thing.
Yeah, and Gareth, you collect a variety of things.
You're actually the only
collector in the studio here.
Yeah, that's why I'm fascinated by it, because if I had unlimited resources, I would amass a museum of collections. I would just, I'd gather all kinds. To me, art, particularly historical art, I would absolutely fill my walls with some of the most beautiful works of human creative ingenuity.
Hmm.
And I would have books that were printed on the Gutenberg printing press in Germany. And I love that stuff. I collect old books. I collect old coins. I collect old guns. I collect old swords. I love that stuff.
Does it bother you?
Makes me happy. I see it on my walls. I see it in my house. It gives me great joy, huge amounts of happiness, genuine happiness. Not that I own it, but that it's right there. I can look at it any time I want. And I do. I don't just pass it by.
Okay.
Love it. But it's amateurish because I don't have huge amounts of money. If I had like tons of cash, I would have an impressive collection.
So when people come over to your place, do you steer them away from the bookshelves? Like, don't touch this.
Well, the point is, like, a lot of people just don't have any interest in that stuff, and I understand that.
Mm.
So they don't care. They're like, wow, that's a lot of books. I'm like, yeah, it's a lot of books. All right.
They aren't just books.
No, I don't do that. I'm not going to lecture
people. You're juvenile.
I'm not going to lecture people.
Well, Gareth, maybe a better question is, if you were to have a museum, what would your museum be? Because you know there's that museum of penises in Iceland, and it's just everywhere. There was a blue whale cock and everything.
Or there's the other one, the Museum of Bad Inventions or something.
Yeah.
Mm. Or failed inventions, yes.
One place I was really upset I didn't get to in Germany was the Spy Museum.
Oh, wow, that sounds great.
Yeah, they show you all the stuff that was used during the Cold War. Mm-hmm. Like, you could use all the proper James Bond inventions, like an umbrella that could kill people and, you know, these poison tip pens and things like that. That would be fascinating to have. But I don't know. I mean, it would be a very general collection of human historical artifacts, I reckon.
Hmm.
I mean, I would love to have I'd love, give me a day in the Vatican Library, and I will be the happiest man in the world. I could spend weeks and weeks and weeks in the Louvre in Paris, just walking around. I'll see the same painting 1,000 times and never get bored. I love that stuff. Love it. Makes me happy.
Do you feel the same way about sculptures?
Yeah. Depends who. You show me Bernini? Yes, I'm interested.
That's a wine cooler.
Yeah, I was like,
that's, you show Sia Bernini, it's a different story altogether.
When Bernini was mentioned, I was like, oh, okay. I assume Bernini is an artist?
Yeah, sculptor. Sculptor in the 1600s.
Is it B-E-R-N-I-N-I?
Yeah, he also did the...
Definitely a wine cooler. Yeah, no.
It's amazing. All right, enough of that crap, though. Let's move on. What else is in the news?
Okay, so here's an interesting story. Do you guys remember the story about a couple on YouTube? They had a YouTube channel, and the channel was all about how they pull off different stunts. Mm-hmm. And one of the stunts was the boyfriend telling her girlfriend, you are going to point a pistol at my chest. I'm going to hold a thick book in front of it. You're going to shoot, and the bullet is going to get caught in the book. And then she shot him, and then he died?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Great. That was the end of their YouTube channel.
So a judge in the U.S. state of Minnesota has sentenced the YouTube prankster to 6 months in prison. This happened last week for fatally shooting her boyfriend in the botched video stunt that they had hoped would go viral. Now, the question here is, how do we feel about this? Because in the video, you can hear the girl saying, me and Pedro, this is not the boyfriend who is no longer, are probably going to shoot one of the most dangerous videos ever. Perez wrote on Twitter prior to performing the stunt, his idea, not mine. So, why then is she going to jail? Is it a case of, yeah, but you shot somebody,
yeah,
so
you
therefore
shot someone.
There must be consequences.
You killed someone.
Okay, so you are pretty decided about that. Because this, this is a tricky one for me.
Look, she's been punished enough because she killed her husband or boyfriend.
Yeah.
And I'm sure she didn't want to do that. They were just looking for attention. But there has to be a price for stupid. And there has to be a price paid for someone taking the life of someone else. Sorry.
Her name is Mona Lisa Perez. She is a 20-year-old mother of 2 children. Believed her boyfriend Pedro would be shielded by the thick book as she shot him at close range last June.
Oh, my God.
Oh, and this happened in front of onlookers, apparently, as well. Aside from the fact that they, you know, it was for their YouTube channel. But this apparently happened in front of onlookers as well. So Judge Jeffrey Remick followed the plea agreement recommendations in his sentencing. The plea agreement allows Perez to serve her prison time in 10-day increments over 3 years.
How?
So she goes to prison for 10 days.
And then she goes back out.
Goes home.
She is eligible to serve the final 3 months of her sentence in home confinement, and then she's going to be subject to 10 years of supervised probation. And this is the thing. It's like, yes, she needs to be punished, but it sounds to me like the, you know, the judge was thinking, but just give her the least damaging punishment possible.
Well, she knows she's done wrong, clearly. I mean, she's lost her boyfriend, and she didn't want to do that. There was no intention to kill there, but she killed. So at very least, she's committed manslaughter, second-degree murder in America. So she must be punished for that. There's a certain book. There's a script the judge has to follow. But she's not dangerous to society. Mm. She's not going out there planning another killing.
Until she gets into another relationship.
Who's going to rush to be married to her?
It was his idea, not hers. So even you can't even argue intent there or intention.
Oh, and guys have never had ideas because women have coerced them into thinking a certain way? The miniature Pomeranian was my idea. I was a Rottweiler man, but no, I'm changed.
Take the rest of the world outside of this entire scenario, and I presume here, because she's the mother of two, I presume that the dead boyfriend was a father. Imagine how stupid you sound as a parent, having to tell your kids one day,
Mommy, where's daddy? What happened to daddy? Well, mommy shot him. What? Mommy's a murderer? No, we were doing a prank for YouTube.
How stupid you sound.
Yeah, but guys, YouTube's a big deal. The kids understand. They'll be like, yeah, right, how many hits?
Well, there are also a couple of people.
Did you monetize?
There are also a couple of people who are apparently upset about the fact that their YouTube channel is still up and running because, you know, people were like,
"Is this video still online?"
Let's see. There's a link here that I can click on.
They would have taken that down.
Let's see.
It's a snuff film.
clicking on the film, Mummy versus Puppy.
Oh my God, is that what it's called?
Oh, it's still up and running.
What?
Wait,
Jesus.
What? The Whisper Challenge? Okay, I don't want to watch somebody getting shot.
No.
And also,
it's not
that
the worst
means...
thing your browser history's got on right now.
No, it absolutely is. My browser history is just full of dick. Oh. No, nobody actually loses their life.
I don't know. Some of the dick I saw the other day, it looked threatening to me.
You mentioned, like, you don't want to watch this and you immediately shut it down.
Yeah, I can't watch stuff like that.
I'm like that too. When someone sends me a video of, like, someone having a motorbike accident or something, even if they live, I don't want to see it. I delete that shit. I'm not interested in violence like that. Don't want to see it. I know there are a lot of people who can handle it. I don't want to see that. I'm really not turned on by this stuff. And when someone sends me a video and, like, I know that someone's going to get hurt in it, but badly.
Yeah.
You see mangled. Like, someone sent me a video once of this guy's working in a factory and, like, he gets pulled into this machine. And it's just the most... the fact that I'm bringing it up now is because it's still bothering me. A couple of months later, I didn't know what was going to happen in the video, so I watched. And then... I was like, I wish I could unsee that.
Mm.
I don't like that stuff. I don't think that anyone should ban it. I don't think that, there are going to be people who are going to want to look at autopsy videos, and there are going to be people who want to see assassinations, and that's fine. Do your thing, but I'd prefer to opt out. And just warn me, just say to me, someone dies in this video, I don't want to watch that. If you're okay with that, you go for it. You obviously made of stronger stuff than me. I don't need to see people being killed.
Or it's like, a lot of these videos that go viral in schools.
Of the bullying.
Of the bullying.
Oh, I hate that too.
And every now and again you'll hear a story in the news about somebody having captured another person either being sexually assaulted or being raped.
Oh, no.
And then stuff like that going viral as well.
And don't get me wrong. Like, yeah, I mean, I don't mind if it's like there's this account I follow on Instagram called Kids Getting Hurt. But it's not like the kids die. They go down a slip and slide and then they bump their heads.
Okay,
that's funny.
Sadistic bastards.
No, that's funny. That's a funny account. It's really very entertaining.
Watching
because
kids in the playground.
Well, the worst part is that their parents have filmed this, right?
Yeah.
And then and they slide down the slide and the kid like tumbles over and smashes its head into the sand. And you're like, well, that's funny. It's entertaining because the kid's like a,
it's just a clumsy little.
Yeah, it's going to survive.
Being.
It'll be fine. But I don't want to see I don't want to see a mangled, like, dead body at the end of the video, please. Mm. If you don't mind, that's not for me. Shit. Some people like that stuff, eh? Some people, like, there are sites on the internet, and particularly people will tell you about the dark web, where you can find anything. You find, like, people who've, I don't know, punched each other until they're dead or whatever. I mean, that's just so offensive to me, but I'm not going to try and ban it for you. If you want to see that stuff, you go for it.
But if you do like watching that stuff, don't you think that there's something wrong with you?
It's interesting you bring this up. Dan Carlin, who does his Hardcore History series... And I listen to that all the time. He's just done an episode on executions and how these executions throughout human history until they became, things that happened behind the jail wall. People used to love executions. And they liked seeing the torture as well. Because they used to do horrible things. Like, you know what breaking on the wheel is?
No.
It's this medieval torture where they would take someone who did something terrible. And they would attach them to, like, a wagon wheel. And they would smash their bones. They would smash their arms to smithereens. Like, bit of splintered bone and blood all over the place and meat. And while they were alive. And then they'd do this to people. And it attracted huge crowds. Chopping of heads off. Chopping of arms off. These are supposedly civilized, Europe in the Enlightenment era, the 1700s. And people loved it. So are we sick? Are we the ones who are different who say that we don't want to watch that stuff? Because I don't want to see that. I'm sorry. I don't like that. I don't even want to watch that too much in movies.
Mm.
I don't mind if it's historically trying to be as accurate as possible and they're trying to show it. Even the pretend stuff I don't like, where I know it's fake. I'm still not that into it.
I can't even handle jackass videos.
Yeah, that hurts.
I can't handle watching
some guy
that
gets
stuff.
Smashed in the balls with a hammer. I get sore. I don't want to see that.
Uh-uh.
Ben, you don't mind, huh?
I prefer not to see it, but I'm not really fazed by it. Like, I've become very desensitized, unfortunately. I've seen a variety of things, and I can't say it changes my day, but when animals are involved, I do get very upset.
Mm. Can't
watch that.
Oh, I can't see those. Someone sends videos of, like, this animal abuse or child abuse or whatever. I don't want to see that. God, it upsets me. I just prefer to be blissfully ignorant. I know that's a terrible position that some people will say is wrong. You need to see it to know how bad it is. Leave me out. I'm okay with not seeing it, if you don't mind. Anyway, all right, let's move on.
Okay, then. Should we talk a little bit about Trump's porn star problems?
Well, this is... what's her name? Slimy Daniels? What?
Stormy.
Stormy Daniels. Mm-hmm. Right.
A law firm that is representing the U.S. president and the corporation that paid the porn actress Stormy Daniels in what she called hush money over an alleged affair with Trump have revealed in a court filing that they are now seeking $20 million U.S. dollars in damages for multiple violations of a non-disclosure agreement. So the story, as was initially reported, Stormy Daniels, you know, wanted to blow the lid or whatever on what her and Trump had done. One of Trump's lawyers said, no, here's $130,000 U.S. dollars, now you go away. She accepted the money, and then she changed her mind. Yeah. So in a filing with the U.S. District Court for the Central District of California, which was made public last week, they've asked for a lawsuit by Daniels that seeks to nullify the agreement to be moved to a federal district court.
What are they looking for here? I don't understand this story. I really don't get it. So Donald Trump may or may not have had some sexual relations with a porn star. Isn't that every guy's fantasy? So he does it, and then he makes a sign, an NDA.
Yes.
This is according to the story that
I've heard.
So then she's not allowed to talk about it, but she then goes out and talks about it. So they're going to sue her, and they're going to take the money back that she was paid in the NDA.
Under the NDA, Daniels, whose legal name is Stephanie Clifford, could be subjected to a $1 million penalty each time the deal was broken.
Yo.
Daniels has alleged that she had an affair with Trump that began in 2006 and that it lasted several months. Michael Cohen, a private lawyer for Trump, has said that he paid her the $130,000 U.S. dollars of his own money during the 2016 presidential election campaign, and Cohen has not explained why he made the payment and has not said if Trump was aware of it. Ooh.
Wow. It's a mess.
Sounds like a classic case of opportunism, you know?
Yeah, she
because
obviously...
I mean, what, 2006? That's a long time ago.
She's probably weighing up, okay, if I can sell this story, if I can get it out there, I can make enough money to pay the fines.
Oh.
And have some left over. Because she's going to be fined $1 million every time she breaks the agreement. So... that could be like a couple of million dollars. That could be like $20-30 million by the time she's told 20 or 30 different outlets.
Yeah.
She better be sure she's going to pull in a lot more cash, otherwise she's finished.
Yeah, I think she and her legal team maybe underestimated the power that they thought they held. Because, you know, it's easy to blackmail a president. Well, it's not easy to blackmail a president, but the potential rewards of trying to blackmail a president can be huge.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
But yeah, now Trump's legal team have come back and they're saying, no, actually, we are going to sue you for $20 million U.S. dollars in damages.
There we go, $20 million. But that is kind of an admission that he did have sex with her. Because why would she have had an NDA if nothing happened? Why would you make a porn star sign an NDA if you didn't do anything with a porn star? Huh? Makes sense, right? So he's obviously less embarrassed that he was involved with a porn star than he is about her telling everybody. In other words, he doesn't mind people knowing, but he doesn't want her to talk about it. It's very weird. The whole thing's very, very odd. I mean, do you have anything else to say there, Janet Hubert?
Bitches, please.
Yeah, all right.
Thank you, Miss Janet.
What's happening with Rich? No, we can't find him. Jeez, all right. He's probably on his bike somewhere. That's why he can't answer the phone. Rich Mulholland. We were meant to do the reality check, which we do every Monday with Rich Mulholland. I don't know where he is this morning. I think we must move to the David Beckham interview. People might not have heard that. If you haven't heard it, it's coming up next. Let's wrap it up with the unnews for this morning and then get stuck into our discussion with David Beckham. Yep. Met him last week Thursday. He was out here with his new brand of whiskey, which is called Haig Clubman. You can find out all about that by going to cliffcentral.com. And if you do that, you can also get all the links to all the different stuff that we've done over the last couple of weeks with other interesting guests, because we've had amazing people pop by. And we've got even more amazing people planned for the next couple of days. Elson, it's going to be good. Who?
Elson.
Elson is on Skype? What does he want? Hey, Elson, what's up, dude?
Hey, I'm good. You all right?
Yeah, good. What's happening?
Well, nothing much. So I was listening to the news just now when my buddy was talking about Stormy Daniels and this Trump thing.
Yeah.
The little that I know about why she feels she might have the balls to talk about it now, well, what I heard in the news is that in the NDA, neither of the two parties use their real names. And so the signatures that we put there, because they never use their real names, will not hold anymore.
Hmm.
And that's why she feels she can talk about it now, because their real names were not put in there. So that shit doesn't hold anymore. And so she can speak about it because the NDA is not binding.
All right. Well, I mean, if that's the case, then you can understand. She probably thinks she's got a lot to prove, though.
Because well, they're not denying it.
Even if they didn't use their real names, we know who they mean because we can see who the parties are in court. So,
yeah,
you know, it's going to be a tough argument. And plus, you know, Trump loves a law case. He loves bringing the lawyers in. He loves getting them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and he loves something that goes down in court. So he's not going to let go this easily. Plus, he's got nothing to lose now. It's already out there. She's got everything to lose.
This is true.
Yeah. All right.
All right, man.
Elson, nice to hear from you, dude.
Thank you.
Let me get to Unnews. Thank you. There's Elson, who's calling us from Zim.
Zambia.
Is he in Zambia now?
Remember, he moved from...
Yeah, that's right. He might have moved back to Zim. Who knows? He was very outspoken about Robert Mugabe.
And now the news. The news you...
All right, let's go. Here it is. Unnews for this morning. Russia are set to go to the polls. Yeah, Vladimir Putin hoping to be re-elected in what can only be described as a waste of paper. Up there with the printing of the Cape Times, Russians are so keen to be a part of the process. I wonder what the result will be, Mabale. Can you imagine? It's a real photo finish, this one. Everyone is wondering why Day Zero was scrapped in the Cape, but the reason's actually kind of simple. Day Zero is scaring tourists away. The DA don't have time to say Day Zero is no longer a thing, but behind the scenes it is still a thing and will probably happen next Tuesday. But enjoy the tourists. In other news, Kagiso Rabada's appeal will be heard today. He and his legal team are hoping to overturn a two-match suspension given to him by the ICC, but the ICC don't believe he has a case. Lead advocate Dalimpofu thinks otherwise and has a lot of dirt on cricket's governing body that he will unleash if he needs to. And Lalit Modi is allegedly even on standby if needed, so Rabada could well play in Cape Town after all. We'll keep an eye on that story. That is... You're on news for this morning. Let me quickly tell you, because there's a lot going on, it's time for another exclusive movie preview.
Yeah.
Ah, upfront announcement here. This is the first thing on a Monday. You need to know. Five Fingers for Marseille, the new local movie, had its world premiere at last year's Toronto Film Festival. It's been described as a must-see masterwork, visually stunning and captivating, so it's one you don't want to miss. Hey, do you remember we told you The Shape of Water was good? And we had a premiere for that. And then look at it. It won all the Oscars. 20 years ago, the Five Fingers fought for a rural town of Marseille against brutal police oppression after fleeing in disgrace. Dao, who's played by Vuyo Dabula, returns, seeking peace, finding that the town is under a new threat. He must reluctantly fight to free it. Will the Five Fingers stand again? Well, join us to find out. Wednesday, 28 March 2018 at 7 o'clock at Sturt Kennicore Cinema Nouveau in Rosebank for the movie you don't want to miss. You can email events@cliffcentral.com to get your hands on tickets. That's events@cliffcentral.com. Come along and see this movie with us. Wednesday, 28 March. Put it in your diary and email us today so you can get your chance. It's time for an exclusive interview with David Beckham, which we had last week. Very, very exciting. Haig Clubman is the new unconventional, stylish whiskey designed for unconventional people. It's the brainchild of revered and respected Haig, that's a big brand of whiskies in Scotland, and David Beckham, and it fuses the worlds of quality and credibility with a modern, stylish flair. It's for independent women, dynamic young men, and people who break the rules. David Beckham breaks the rules, and I asked him why he decided to add a whiskey to his portfolio, among other things. If you want to know that and a whole lot more about David Beckham, it's about to come up. You can also download the podcast at cliffcentral.com. Hey, Clubman, not for sale to persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
This is cliffcentral.com.